From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the first day of February 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, will be here to look at the cash grain market. And we'll talk about the weather forecast with the state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, Jim Angel, along the way. Dave Dickey will have a look at the news for the day. And I'll remind you of all the upcoming Ag Outlook panels next week. And to purchase your tickets for our all-day Ag Outlook scheduled for the fifth day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, you can dial in now if you want at 217-333-7300. Tickets are just $25. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract for the March soft red winter wheat at $7.64.5 was down 15 cents, and that is a close, so it may change yet. May futures at $7.73.25 closed down 14 and 3 quarters. In July at $7.78.75 on its last trade in the wheat pit from Chicago, down 14 and a half. A settlement price from Kansas City for the hard red at $8.57.75 in the harvest July. Down 2.75. Back in Chicago from the corn pit today, $7.37.75, a settlement price, rather a close, down 2.75 in the May futures there. $7.38.5, 3.5 cents lower. July corn, $7.30.25, down 3 cents. And September futures up a quarter at $6.15.5 a bushel. December futures, $5.92.5, up 1.5 cents. And the March contract at $6.02, a half higher. Next year's May futures at $6.09.75, up a penny and a quarter. Soy complex now bean futures March contract up 4 cents at $14.72.5. The May at $14.65 up 5.25. In July soybeans at $14.56.75 up 7.25 on the day. The November futures at $13.31.75 up 4. And January of next year at $13.38 up 5.75. Bean meal futures $1.40 higher at $4.27.80. Bean oil up 19 cents at $53.05. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at $132.17.5, down 62.5 cents. April feeders were 45 cents lower at $152.12.5. And lean hogs and the apes at $88.75 were 60 cents lower. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, March contract, $97.63 a barrel, up 14 cents. The RBOB gasoline, our wholesale price at $3.05 1/10 cent, up 2 cents for the day. And ethanol at $2.49, 3 2/10 cent higher. Natural gas at $3.29 7/10, down 4 2/10 cent. The heating oil or diesel fuel, 4 1/10 cent higher at $3.16 even. And the gold futures on the day up $8.60 at $1,669.90 an ounce. The U.S. dollar trading at 79.13 is down 0.07 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 16 degrees. It'll be cool outside with wind chill values of -2 to 3 above. West-southwest winds at 13 to 15 miles an hour. Don't often get that in that kind of cold weather, but that's the way it'll be this afternoon, gusting all the way to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, snow mainly after 9 in the evening. That's central time, low around 14. Wind chill values between 4 and 9. Southwest winds again at 10 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation this evening set at 90%. New snowfall accumulations of 1 to 2 inches is possible this evening. And then tomorrow, snow will continue. That mainly before noon. It'll be cloudy thereafter, a high of 31 on a south-southwest wind at 10 miles an hour. Turning to the west by the time we get to the afternoon, chance of precipitation in the morning at 60%. New snow accumulation in the morning, less than half an inch. A 50% chance of snow Saturday night with a low of 23, winds out of the west at 9 to 15, gusting all the way to 20 miles an hour. On Sunday, sunny skies and 29. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 17. Monday, sunny and 36. Monday night, 23 degrees with a low. And on Tuesday of next week, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy, a high near 23 degrees. More at the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This is the first day of February 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, Mike Zuzolo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We could talk about what happened in the markets today, and we probably should, but let's talk about January as a month, as a whole, and what the charts look like to you at this time.
Well, I think last week's trade, chart-wise, was bad enough that this week was a must-win for the guy who was a fundamental bull or the gal who was a chart technician that was bullish, that last week's trade put us on some pretty big moving averages that we needed to hold in some of the commodity index charts. This week we came back around and brought some support back into the technicals, and so I think last week's trade and this week's trade really summed up and gave the market pretty much the whole picture for January, that you've got enough support now technically and you've got enough fundamentals and uncertainty fundamentally that you can go on higher as long as you hold these major levels that we tested a week ago today.
How quickly things do turn. What are the fundamentals in favor of a higher move and in which commodities?
Well, I think the first and foremost would be Kansas City wheat, but that was the leader to the downside. And I think this is the major rub, Todd, when it comes to the supply weather side versus the demand side. And I think this is where, after the midday models came in a little bit wetter, for the Kansas City area, for the wheat belt in that region, with the corn and beans no longer pulling the wheat up like they had earlier this week, you saw the return, and I talked to some colleagues about an hour ago, and they saw this from their vantage point as well. You saw the return of the fund-led, technically-led, demand-led negativity return at the end of the week, showing most prominently in wheat. So after wheat comes corn, and not beans, in my view anyway, because if you're talking about Argentina and you're talking about bad weather there continuing, you're really talking about clipping the corn crop more so than the beans, especially when it comes to where our biggest competitors lie in the export market. And so I think I would put wheat as number one as the weather bull, corn number two as the weather bull, and beans number three. And I think Informa's numbers, even though I don't, you know, take them at face value very often, the Brazilian bean estimate they raised versus their previous estimate by 2.6 million tons. They're at 84 million tons right now. I think this goes back in line with what we were just talking about. If you're talking about Argentina bullishness, you probably have Brazilian bearishness and supply compensating for the Argentine weather, at least right now.
This is something we heard earlier in the week, that it was likely that the rainfall and the good crop in Brazil would be offsetting, at least for soybeans, offsetting to the poorer crop that would be coming out of Argentina. But there's a big difference in the size of those two crops, too. Brazil, I think, dwarfs Argentina, but I don't recall the numbers quite exactly.
Yeah, you're talking about 80 versus 20 or 85 versus 25. You're exactly right. It's not hard for Brazil to come in and make up what Argentina loses when it comes to beans. That's where the corn differentiation is, because Brazil just doesn't have the competitive level as much as Argentina does when it comes to us. And when I was at the top producer seminar of this week, you know, everybody I spoke with about the bean markets and the weather in South America, everybody I spoke with said, I don't think that the Brazilian crop is going down necessarily, and I think it's, and I'm paraphrasing what they say, I think it's going to be at least 80 million tons. It's just being delayed because of these northern Brazil rains, and they weren't too charged up or fired up about their dryness in Rio Grande do Sul in the southern parts of Brazil. And so if I take that at face value, it goes back to how I answer your previous question about where's the supply weather bowl first and foremost.
Oh, you had to bring up top producer, didn't you?
No.
I'm just kidding you. Hey, so I don't care. I mean, I do care. I don't care that you brought it up. I do care.
Like me talking about West Lafayette last week, Todd.
Hey, so what was the assessment in general when you listened to all the folks, and there were a lot of them on stage up there, what was the assessment of the crew from top producer about current marketplaces? And I mean, in general, not top producer, but all of those analysts that were there.
Yeah, I didn't get to see very many of them because I had some side meetings going on. I had some side conferences going on as well. But what I did hear from Iowa State and from Brent Gloy at Purdue, what little I heard there, I think most of what everybody's chiming in and agreeing with is that your private crop insurance is going to be so important to how you handle your marketing in 2013 and going forward. But the uncertainty of the farm bill puts 2013 with extra importance and extra seriousness of how you handle your marketing side and integrating that with your private or personal crop insurance with your agency. And I think that was a very common theme in everything I heard.
And that's because in 2014 they're unsure as to what the crop insurance will look like, and also that, and I'm going to make a bet here, that most of them were saying if you were going to use crop insurance this year, as Gary Schnitke has said, plant corn, or it's more likely that farmers will plant corn because crop insurance and the rest of the, and even without crop insurance at this point, the marketplace is telling producers plant corn, but they may have to give up income in 2014 should they do that.
Yeah, and I think the other, exactly right, and I think to only to complement you, what you just said is the shallow loss provision it sounds like it's going to be the common theme in the next farm bill with crop insurance. It's really going to be your private crop insurance that protects you in the deep loss scenarios. But if you're talking about what the government can do for you in protecting you on the farm, it's going to be more shallow losses, about, you know, $60, $40, $50 an acre to get you by with the shallow loss of a mediocre yield or a somewhat lower than average price. But, you know, nothing compared to history, the government won't be there to provide such a deep, deep safety net. And I think that takes some getting used to. That takes some number crunching. And I thought the Iowa State and others who did their marketing side presented a really nice format to trying to understand that and get your hands around that.
Now, on this program, we don't usually, at least at this time of year, look at new crop and then 2014 or the next new crop beyond that.
Yeah.
But that's what most are saying. And I think it still is coming to the decision as to what you're putting in the ground this year. What are you talking to with your clients, if at all, about this issue?
This is huge, and I'm glad you brought it up because it is. I've never been a multi-year seller. I've never felt comfortable enough because of the risk on the table and the super cycle analysis that has been done before me and that I continue to do on my own as far as the commodity bull market. I am in a position at this point that if the gross domestic product and the aggregate demand, the U.S. economy can't perform the first half of this year, and we start to see the dollar work against us and go higher, and we start to see bond yields and interest rates start to work against us and go higher, I'm really putting on the table 2014 sales before 2013 harvest, because this is where the cycle analysis would suggest maybe after 2013 you did take the commodity super cycle to its peak, and you're going to be going down 6, 7, 8, 9, 11 years and finish out the cycle. So I have to keep it on the table after what I've looked at in the analytical side. But it's all dependent upon growth here in the United States, because that's going to derive where we go with China in terms of growth. And that first and foremost comes to fruition if the dollar goes up and interest rates go up, because those have been the drivers of our stock market and helped propel our commodity trade these last couple, 3 years since the financial crisis. After that, you better get some real growth if those start turning against you.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great weekend, sir.
Hey, you too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Well, if you've been looking for a place to go and see a whole bunch of agricultural analysts, Dave Dickey and I have some lineups for you next week. We'll be in Muhammad at the Farm Credit Service Building on Monday night. On Tuesday, we'll be at the Farm Bureau or Center for Agriculture Building in DeKalb County. On Wednesday, at the Illinois Pork Expo in Peoria. And on Thursday, in Casey at Richard's Farm Restaurant. You can find all the details at willag.org. Now here's Dave.
In agricultural news, The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency on Thursday held its ground on the federal mandate for using renewable motor fuels. The agency said it intended to require U.S. refiners and fuel importers to use a total of 16.55 billion gallons of renewable fuel during 2013, compared to 15.2 billion gallons last year. The EPA requirement for advanced fuel would be about 2.75 billion gallons in 2013, compared to 2 billion gallons last year. 14 million gallons must be cellulosic fuel. MF Global Holdings Limited bankruptcy judge yesterday approved a key settlement among the failed brokerage's three key constituents, opening the possibility that the remaining money owed to customers could be eventually returned. U.S. commodity futures customers are expected now to get about 93 cents on the dollar in cash back. A new report from Rabobank says that pressure on production and limited growth in global consumption are likely to bring some weakness in pork prices this quarter into the second quarter of 2013. According to Rabobank, the factors most likely to affect pork prices will be China's increasing demand for imports and whether the U.S. can expand production despite rising feed costs. Tyson Foods' fiscal first quarter earnings jumped 11% as the meat processor's results from chicken and beef sales improved on stronger prices and margins. For the period ending December 29th, Tyson reported a profit of $173 million, or 48 cents a share, up from $156 million, or 42 cents a share a year ago. Tyson's chicken business saw its operating income soar to $107 million from $32 million a year ago. The company's beef segment saw its sales volume decline 10%, though income rose to $46 million from $31 million. And the European Union yesterday proposed to ban for at least 2 years some uses of three insecticides suspected of harming honeybees. The proposal comes from the European Commission. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm ULVI Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program we'll record this afternoon at about 4:30 and then post to our website at 6 o'clock Central Time, USA, this evening. Our guest this week is from Eddyville at the Cargill plant. Ray Jenkins will join us for Commodity Week. It's a great program. You should listen to it. You can do that online or on the radio stations online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, over the next 2 years, the congressionally mandated demand for ethanol will exceed the allowable blend limit. Up next, more on how a built-in safety valve will temporarily make it possible for the industry to comply with both measures. The RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard, which promotes the use of alternatives to gasoline produced from crude oil, was written into law after 9/11. It also deals with fuels other than gasoline, but today we'll stick with just the stuff you put in your car. Congress decided it wanted 15 billion gallons of an alternative fuel, think corn-based ethanol, to be used in the nation's gasoline supply by the year 2015. It at the same time gave U.S. EPA the power to regulate a maximum percentage of corn ethanol to be blended into each gallon of gas. That's why the sticker on the gas pump says, may contain up to 10% ethanol. Well, at the time, the thought was 15 billion gallons would be less than 10% of the gasoline supply. That won't be the case in 2015. Most believe that 10% maximum will be closer to 13.5 billion gallons. Well, here's the question, if not a problem. How do the oil companies provide, by law, 15 billion gallons of gasoline made from renewable fuels when the regulations say no more than 10%. It's a 1.5 billion gallon gap. Enter RINs, or Renewable Identification Numbers. These are certificates assigned to each gallon of ethanol blended into the gasoline supply. The industry has been blending more gallons than mandated, but less than the 10% regulation. The extras have certificates, which can be used in the future to fill the gap, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin.
These are the tradable credits that you use to technically enforce the renewable fuels mandate. And if you've been producing above it, you can hold on to those and use them to meet a future requirement. And so we have a large stock of basically past RINs credits that can be used for a while. We estimate about 2.5 billion gallons of those RINs credits.
Relief. The law and the regulation can both be met, but not for long, says Irwin.
Because A, you have to use those RINs to meet this gap between the blend wall amount of ethanol and this rising requirement. So that's going to chew them up. And also, as we export, that also effectively means we have to replace anything we export with those RINs values as well. So sometime in 2014 or 2015, we're going to run out of our ability to basically draw on those credits to meet the RFS.
It is a stopgap measure. Eventually, a fix in Washington, D.C. will be required. An acceptable pathway for that to happen hasn't yet been identified. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's check the cash grain market on this Friday afternoon. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, is on the phone line with us today. Thanks for taking the time with us, Bruce. Tell me about the movement of grain in your area.
Quite a bit of cash movement on the rallies today. We didn't have a huge amount of corn to start with, and a lot of pricing of old basis contracts, corn that's been on DP contracts, mostly old crop, a little bit of new.
Are your expectations of when it will be delivered?
Oh, it's already in the house.
Just a done deal.
It has been for a few months.
Just a done deal at that point. So then ready to put them on the train, those bushels on the trains pretty quickly. Where are they going to be headed to, you think?
Oh, it's hard to tell right now. I think a lot of it is still going to go domestic processor. It's just what version of domestic processor exports. We just can't get anything done on the export side, it seems like.
And that is for what reason? No buyers or other things?
No buyers. We've been priced out of the market. Usually you expect to see front-end sales on that. And we've seen, the second crop Brazilian corn numbers have really jumped up, and they were pushing a lot of beans out early in that harvest and early post-harvest slot that we usually expect to dominate sales in.
Will USDA have to cut exports for the year in the coming months?
I think the two big questions are the export numbers, and unless, I think we'll see some exports coming back later, but not enough to get us back healthy again, as we see the Brazilian shipping space or dock space switch over to soybeans with harvest coming on, but that won't be enough to catch us up. I think they're also going to have to cut back on ethanol numbers.
All right, thanks so much. What are your bids for today?
We are at $7.50 on nearby corn and $14.93 on soybeans.
Thanks so much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on a Friday afternoon for the Closing Market Report. Back in 2 minutes, we'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
It's National Baked Alaska Day. It's also Feast of St. Bridget of Ireland, patron of cattle, chicken farmers, and dairy maids. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, Botanical Magazine was first published in London, edited by William Curtis. In 1913, Grand Central Terminal in New York City opened. It was the largest railroad station in the world, with 44 platforms and 67 tracks on two levels. In 1939, state assemblymen in Maine introduced a bill in the legislature to make it illegal to use tomatoes in New England clam chowder. According to some sources, the addition of tomatoes in place of milk was initially the work of Portuguese immigrants in Rhode Island, as tomato-based stews were already a traditional part of Portuguese cuisine. Scornful New Englanders called this modified version Manhattan-style clam chowder because, in their view, calling someone a New Yorker was an insult. In 1953, James Lewis Kraft died, the founder of Kraft Company. He patented, in 1916, pasteurized processed cheese, a low-cost cheese that would not spoil. While not overly popular with the public, the U.S. Army purchased over 6 million tins of it during World War I. And during the Depression, it became popular because of its low cost. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the closing market report for Friday afternoon. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, joins us for a look at the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about your version of what happened this week across the state of Illinois and whether the rainfall made much of a difference or not.
That's right. We went from spring to winter from the beginning of the week to just now. We had highs in the 50s and 60s there early in the week. It looks like for this part of the state, the soils were actually thawed out for the most part at that point in time. So the rain that we got early in the week had a good chance to soak in there. And so that was good news as far as recharging soil moisture. And you also saw quite a few of the streams come up. In fact, I saw a little bit of water staining in some of the fields out there. So I think soil moisture-wise, we're in pretty good shape. So didn't get a lot of snow this January, but we're making up for it with rain.
Yeah, you said this part of the state. Are there different places in the western part of the state, northern part of the state, maybe southern part of the state that are not faring as well?
Yeah, I would say right now that the area of concern is still the northern part of the state. They got the least amount of rain this last month, especially that kind of that northwest corner. They got less than 3 inches. Most of the rest of the state got about 3 to 5, and southern Illinois was even wetter yet. They got about, in some places, 5 to 6 inches of rain in the far southern part of the state. So great shape in southern Illinois, not so much in the northern part of the state there. And statewide for January as a whole, below average on snowfall. So that's pretty much across the state at this point. So northern Illinois, maybe about 8 to 10 inches of snow for the month. Get down to southern Illinois, they basically got no snowfall in far southern Illinois. So, and here in central part of the state, we got about 1.5 inches here in Champaign. So continuation of that very mild winter weather.
That rainfall came on some balmy feeling weather early in the week, and it was followed up quickly by some of the coldest weather of the season. Will we moderate?
That's right. We looks like we'll moderate, not so much this weekend, but as we move into next week. This weekend, we're going to see highs still on the cold side, below freezing on Saturday and Sunday. High Saturday is 31, high on Sunday 29, and but later on this week, it'll get back up into the 30s, and that's about average for this time of year. So we'll be back to more seasonal kind of numbers on the temperature side. Maybe a chance of some snow this weekend, especially tonight and tomorrow, about 1 to 2 inches, according to the National Weather Service. And then another shot maybe later this next week, around Thursday, might see some more rain and snow. So it's pretty exciting out there.
Hey, Jim, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Okay, you're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. That wraps it up. Be sure to listen in for Commodity Week on our website at willag.org. Our guest this week, Ray Jenkins of the Eddyville Cargill plant.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.